And we're back on the Fan 590. It's Joey Vendetta. Good morning. Joining us now on the telephone live from San Diego, somewhere in San Diego. I don't know if we can give the whereabouts, is Steve Perry. And I will use the term legendary vocalist because, in my opinion, Steve, and not to blow smoke, you are one of the greatest singers of all time. And I'm very pleased to have you on the show this morning.
Holy mackerel, Joey. I owe you money for such an introduction like that. Gee whiz.
How are you? How have you been?
I'm doing good. Actually, I'm actually a little bit north of San Diego in the Del Mar area. That's where I am. And it's beautiful. It's a little bit rainy out here, but it's not too cold, though, I don't think.
That's where the racetrack is, right?
Yes, it is. That's right.
Have you ever been to the Del Mar racetrack?
Oh, yes, many times.
Listen, we're going to talk baseball because we know that you're a big baseball guy, but you're not a horse racing guy at all, are you?
Not really, but I do enjoy the races once in a while, but I'm really a big baseball fan. It started back in 2002 is when it really kicked in for me.
So tell me about that. Obviously, growing up in California, baseball is obviously popular all over the world, but particularly in the United States of America. Tell me how you got into it, 2002.
Well, what happened was I as a kid, I was raised, you know, basically about around music all the time. I was a drummer and drummer-singer. And then I just sort of was into that forever until 2002. I had a big change in my life. And a friend of mine says, when I was up in San Francisco just vacationing one weekend, he said, listen, I'm coming up with a family. Why don't we go to a baseball game? I says, well, I'm not into sports, really. I'm into music. You know, I don't like sports. He says, no, come on. It's Pacific Bell Park, and it's supposed to be beautiful, and the Giants are playing. I said, I don't know nothing about sports. He said, come on, why don't you just come with us? You know, you've been isolating a lot because, you know, I went through a breakup, if you want to know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Went through his breakup, and so I was up there just kind of kicking back. And he said, come on. So I went with him. And I walked into Pac Bell Park. I saw this amazing green field, and these guys came out with these light sort of cream-colored uniforms with some black hats on. And I love the movie Field of Dreams, so I got sort of a hit from that, you know, started thinking about the movie Field of Dreams. And the next thing I know, I'm watching the game, and I'm trying to remember when I was, you know, in high school and stuff, the game, because I was in, like I said, music. So I'm trying to remember the game and got into it. And the next thing I know, I just got bit by the bug in 2002 of baseball. And I stayed up there for that entire season. And that year, the Giants went to the World Series and lost to the Angels. And I've been a fan ever since.
So as a kid, because you were into music, and if you're just tuning in, we're in conversation with Steve Perry. Yes, that's Steve Perry, the vocalist. Now,
that one.
Yes, it's not the plumber from Reseda or the plumber from Rexdale, because I am
now,
in Toronto.
Now, wait a minute. I have done construction, so go easy.
Oh, no, I know. We won't get into that, but let's talk about it. So 2002, the first year you're into it, the Giants go to the World Series, and so I take it you became a Giants fan then, but you're obviously so closely associated with the city of San Francisco anyway, because that's where Journey kind of came up and got together. So I won't say it's ironic, but is that kind of a weird coincidence?
It is kind of amazing that I just gravitated back to San Francisco because I had been living down in Del Mar and I just went up to San Francisco just to chill because I love the city. I mean, it has been a place in my heart since I was a kid, before I even joined Journey. And when I joined the band, yes, hailed from San Francisco. All the members were from there. And so all of a sudden I found myself in a band from San Francisco writing music in that area. From everything was ever written was sung and recorded in the Bay Area and written in the Bay Area. And so, you know, it just kind of, I don't know, I just think emotionally, I guess I needed to just gravitate to square one and spend a little weekend up there and just kind of regroup, you know. So I think, you know, I guess there are no accidents. I was just sort of pulled back to the city by the bay, you know.
So tell me about your love affair with the Giants, especially, you know, we can get into this. This year they come through, they win, and it's kind of ironic that the first year that you become a real Giants fan and you spend the summer in San Francisco and go to a lot of games and all that, as you said earlier, but, you know, they go to the World Series and they lose. So how crushed were you in 2002, or were you too new of a fan to take it really, really hard?
That's exactly right. I took it hard because it was exciting, and it was the first time I was ever buying tickets for playoff games in 2002, and all of a sudden I'm buying tickets for World Series games up there, and it was so exciting, exhilarating. And then when they went to Anaheim, I decided to not buy tickets and go to Anaheim. And so we lost in Anaheim. And so I took it a little hard, but it was, I was new, you know. So the next year is when I realized that what baseball really was in 2002, because 2003 was not the same, or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. And then show up this last season, and here we go again. It's like we had this little sort of like for lack of a better term, you know, there were some dumpster kids on the team that were just picked up on waivers, and they all admit it. They sort of had a scrappiness to them because they were the misfits that nobody wanted, but they had heart, you know. They had fervor from their passion for the game, and I could see it in the beginning of 2010. I could really see it. Of course, it really helps to have Matt Cain, and oh my goodness, mm-hmm. Tim Lincecum doesn't hurt either, and you know, Sanchez, great. These are all great pitchers, and I mean, there's tons of great pitchers on the team. It really helped. But everybody knows that we were lacking in the hitting area, and so we started slowly developing that. Then we got Cody towards the end there. He was one of our last acquisitions, I think. And then when we were in the playoffs, we went to Philly. This guy was a star. He just became a major stud, and just he won some games for us in Philly against some serious pitching.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, serious pitching.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, I don't know. I think this year, it took all this time to really, really know what it was like and what was going on and what the odds were. But as I said in another station in San Francisco, I did an interview with KNBR up there, the sports leader, they call themselves up there. They kept on saying statistics, you know. Well, Steve, well, statistics say that when, you know, Matt Cain is facing off with so-and-so and when Lincecum's facing off with this guy. And I'm going, listen, guys, you know, I love the game. I'm crazy about the game. Yes, I've been in it now only since 2002, but I don't really pay a lot of attention to statistics, and I'll tell you why. Because from a physics standpoint, the ball is round. And from the physics standpoint, the bat is round. And when it's coming at you at a vast rate of speed with English on it, doing all sorts of aerodynamic maneuvers, when that ball gets hit with that bat, any damn thing can happen. And the only thing those guys on that field are trying to do is react as quick as humanly possible to the anything can happen situation. And that's what makes the game a great equalizer to whether you're a team that spends $200 million or your team that spends, you know, $70 million.
Yeah, or even less. There's been many. Yeah, there's been many examples of that. You know, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays obviously come to mind. And here in Toronto, you know, the Blue Jays are a team that don't have a massive payroll. And you know, there's times where they hang in. And then as we get closer to September, they kind of fade away. So I absolutely agree with you 110%. Tell me, how involved were you with the team as it got closer and closer and closer to the World Series? Because, you know, obviously you were going to games, but being a guy who obviously, you know, sang in this band from San Francisco, this little band called Journey, and being a guy who obviously gravitated towards the Giants, I imagine you developed a relationship with the team and the players. Did you get involved in anything specifically, or were you just going to games?
Well, my mojo was to stay away. It really was to stay out of that. I mean, I had so many opportunities to go to batting practice, and I had this whole mojo that I am not stepping on the field because we were doing so great, and I just didn't want to juice up this, you know, this Steve Perry thing. I'm going to walk on the field. I am just a baseball fan. I love baseball. They never even played the music in the stadium because the guys that take care of the music there, they know that I come there so often just for the baseball. And it's just so exciting to me to watch the thrill of the game. So I'm not there to sell a book or mm-hmm. sell an album, you
yep.
know.
Yep.
And they don't even, like I said, they don't play the music, nor do they ask me to do anything promotional or anything like that. But when we were in the playoffs, I got this tap on the shoulder from the musical director who handles the live music there, and he said, Steve, you know, we've never asked you, and we know you love the game. We never want to make you uncomfortable because you come here for the game. They know it. But he said, if there's ever a time in this eighth inning we really got to win this game, we could sure use playing one of the Journey songs and get you to put you on the Jumbotron and get everybody to sing along because this place looks like a morgue. And it did because we were losing one of the games. I can't remember. I believe it might have been one of the games with San Diego or it could have been one of the first games with Philly. I can't remember right now. But anyway, So I believe the first one we did was lights. I said, if you really want to, and you feel it's now's, I guess, the time to do it, because I want to go all the way with this for the team, too. And if you think it'll help, if you really feel it'll help, then just, okay, just do what you got to do. So I don't look at myself. I don't watch myself do anything. I just want to do it and just enjoy this side of a looking glass, so to speak. So I did not look at the Jumbotron, I swear.
Mm-hmm.
And they played the song, so I jumped up and just said, oh, my God, I love this song. You know, I just sit in the regular, just right there in a little regular seat with a little ledge there. And the people turn around, who the hell's that, you know? And I said, gosh, I love that guy's voice. Who is this? And they all turn around and go, who the hell is that back there? So then all of a sudden I just started, you know, screaming along with the song and waving my hands. And they started joining in. And it sort of filled the stadium slowly around the sides. I could see people paying attention, and the whole place, it took just about, I'd say, a third of the song, and then the whole stadium, 45,000 people, were singing and waving their arms, and it was a personal flashback to the old days of being in the band, to be honest with you.
Well, the video is actually on YouTube. There's actually two of them. There's one of you singing along with lights and the stadium joining in. And again, if you're just tuning in this morning, we're talking to Steve Perry. Yes, that's Steve Perry. He sang in Journey, but he's obviously had solo records and success there as well. But so Steve is in the stadium, the Giants are playing, and he's singing along to lights. And then you did Don't Stop Believing, which, by the way, arguably right now is the most popular sports song in the world, and we'll touch on that in a second. But you did the, you know, you did the video where you're sick, and again, you don't look like you're trying to do anything. It looks very natural, but that video starts getting traded all over YouTube, and then you're doing Don't Stop Believing, and that gets traded all over YouTube. Tell me about Don't Stop Believing and what that song has become, because obviously when you wrote the song, I imagine you felt something, because the song is obviously such a great song and means a lot to so many people. But did you have any idea that you'd be sitting here in 2010 going into 2011, you know, just around Christmas, and we'd be talking, or anybody would be talking about what has happened with that song? And I know that the Glee television show has helped resurrect it, but, you know, the placement in The Sopranos at the end of The Sopranos. Tell me about that, because that's where I think the song really took on. Again, obviously a massively popular song before that, but now it's almost become mythical in a way for people, and really makes people feel, I guess, what you wanted them to feel when you wrote it.
Well, you know, it's funny. Your first question is no, I did not know, nor did I think any of the musicians who co-wrote the song, all of us together, that this would happen. Because in my opinion, every one of the songs that were recorded back then were all the same. They all got the same amount of tension. They all got the same amount of concern for the arrangement, for the melodies, for the lyrics, for the tracks having a great feel, because everything you're hearing on those tracks, that comes from an era where you just performed and the tape just captured what you performed. There was no way to tune, fix, or repair as computers can do now. So what you're hearing,
yep,
was literally back in the day.
Yeah,
where you had to be concerned about every overdub and every vocal and every guitar solo and every drum dart. So
it was all real.
It was all real.
Yeah.
And so my point is that every one of the songs got the same concern, and this one, Don't Stop Believing, was no different than the rest of them. But, and then time moves forward, and where it really started, the attention or resurrection of that song, was a friend of mine, Patty Jenkins, did this movie, and it was called Monster with Charlize Theron, and it started where she wanted to write the script, and she put this song, Don't Stop Believing, in the skating rink scene, and she had tested it, I guess. I found this out later. She had tested it, and they really thought that that's where the movie started to come alive, where this relationship starts to build between these people in this skating rink. And so she wanted to use the song, and she was told by her music people she'll never get the song. But the long story short is she got the song because it was an independent movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that started the interest for that song. And it grew to Orange County, the Real OC. It grew to, which ended up other places, and ended up eventually to Sopranos. And then somewhere between or before, it ended up with the White Sox in Chicago, because they used it as a rally song in the clubhouse, they told me. That's what A.J. Pierzynski told me, that they were using it. And then I went to watch them do the World Series in 2005. And it's continued, you know, to to become a song that people use as a rally song, because it really doesn't belong to any one particular team. It's just, I guess it's about not giving up, you know?
And the Dodgers use it, though. How do you feel about that, being a Giants fan?
I used to get up at the bottom of the seventh inning and leave because they'd use it as an eighth inning or eight and a half inning rally song, and I'd be in the parking lot turning the key on my car hearing the song.
So what did you think of the Sopranos' use of Don't Stop Believing?
Well, it was a brilliant use. I knew how that ended before it ended because I, as one of the songwriters, we all have rights to approve the use of these. That means John and Neil also. And they had already approved it, but I was kind of being a bit of a sticker because I wanted to know if anybody was going to be messed up.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't want to see that too much. That'd be more like a Scorsese thing, you know. And I thought, let me think about it and just, you know, send me a clip or tell me what happens. Well, they wouldn't tell me because it was the end of the final season of the whole legacy of the show. So what happened was, eventually I just must admit to you that I said, I will not approve my portion of the songwriting for that song to be used unless you at least give me a clue how it is or isn't used, meaning is somebody going to be whacked or what's going on. So they said, Thursday night, I get a phone call from my publisher. She says, well, David finally phoned it in and told her, this is what happens. And I went, okay, well, if that's the case, then say yes. So literally Thursday night, and it aired that Sunday, they had the right to use it. And I'm sure it was edited. I'm sure it was finished. But I had to hold out because I just wanted to know how it's used, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So when I finally saw it Sunday night, I stood up. When they went to black, they didn't tell me that. They didn't tell me that it just goes, don't stop, and cuts to black. And gee whiz, the whole country thought that their cable went up. You know, and it was just brilliant, you know. And I already have a feeling, you know, if I was to talk to them, I know how I'd start a film if I was going to start a film.
Yeah. And,
but anyway, that's another story.
Let's talk real quickly. Thank you very much again for being on. We'll wrap up right now. What are you up to now? Are you got any music going? What's Steve Perry doing now as far as recorded music? Because obviously the interest level in your career, I mean, look, obviously it's been very high for years. But when you see you at the World Series singing along, you know, with the use of these songs, there's a lot of people that miss that voice. Are we going to get to hear it on some new music anytime soon?
Well, I've been writing music for about the last year and a half with the intention of going in the studio. I've yet to do it because I've got some other stuff going on, but I'm going to jump in there and just see what I can find, you know? I have a very interesting, for lack of a better description, I guess I just have to be honest about it and tell you, I have a love-hate relationship with music in my voice. And that's just be perfectly honest with you, because it's always something that's challenging me. One moment I'll love something, next moment I'm just not sure if I like it at all. And so that makes it very difficult for me to navigate the process of recording and writing and singing. But it's always been that way. So from that has come anything that you're talking about today that people still love. But I think it's the process within myself that makes me dig deep and challenge myself, and it's a tough process. But so some of my reluctance to jump into it is exactly jumping into that process, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but I'm doing it, and I am enjoying. There have been some great moments to where I've had some great writing experiences, and so I have realized that there's a big part of me that's been missing. Which is my musical side. You know, I had to totally let it go, Joey. There's been so much stuff that's happened over the years with the breakup of Journey and the course that they've taken and me just stepping out and just letting them run wherever they want to go. And I've just stayed in the wings behind the mm-hmm. curtain, you
yep.
know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have done nothing. And you just, my record shows, I very seldom come out except for games now and then.
Yeah, yeah.
But the truth is that I realized by writing the last year and a half that there's a side of me when things are joyful and you're writing music and I get that feeling that I can see the landscape of where this potentially musically can go, I just get a very emotional, excited hit about it. And then I catch myself going, wow, you know, why this resonates with me is something is none of my business. I think I need to just stay out of what it is or isn't, and I just need to do it. Because left to my own thinking, I will either sabotage it or have arguments with the quality of it. And I'm just being perfectly, I've never told anybody this before. On my mother's grave, I swear I've never said this to another interviewer. But it's just the truth. And I'm confronting those demons, and I'm having some wonderful moments doing so. And it's been an affirmation in my heart that music is a bigger part of me than I've been, I guess, pretending it's not for a long time.
Well, we appreciate the insight, Steve, and I want to thank you again for coming on this morning with me on the Fan 590. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas and a great 2011. Thank you again so much for joining us.
And everything, and the same to you and yours. Thank you so much.